This is CBS Eye on the News. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we go into not quite low Earth orbit. This is an important detail because Bob Zimmerman is here. This is fundraising month for Bob Zimmerman's Behind the Black, and we're about to very carefully travel as best we can with Virgin Galactic into not quite low Earth orbit. However, in the meantime, your generosity is much appreciated. Bob will accept your subscriptions or your donations. If you give $35 to Bob for his analysis, he will send you one of his four books, and you'll have his email so you can correspond about what it means to be not quite in Earth orbit. Bob, a very good evening to you. Richard Branson and others went into not quite Earth orbit. What is the significance, Bob? What is the experience of going not quite into orbit and coming back down again a couple of minutes later?
Good evening, John. Well, this flight by Virgin Galactic's Unity suborbital craft that took Richard Branson and a few other passengers up, not a paying passengers, by the way, but passengers, crew members of the company, as a test flight up to about 60 miles. This flight would have been really significant culturally about a decade ago. Because at that time, no commercial space had occurred. Branson had been promising it for years. He had been developing this for years. And so if he had done it about a decade ago, he would have proven to the world that a private company with its own investment capital, no government money, could build a spaceship that could put people into space for profit. He would have proved that point. Unfortunately, it didn't happen a decade ago. It happened this past weekend. And though it is a grand achievement and Branson finally delivered on his promise that he was going to be flown into space on his Spaceship Two spacecraft built privately, historic achievement of commercial space doing this was not done by him, but it was done by SpaceX several years ago. And so he didn't convince the world that commercial space could happen, but he did prove that his company can do it, and now they can offer suborbital journeys into space for a period of about 4 to 6 minutes. So you get that flight. And in that sense, the flight was, to a certain extent, a disappointment because it now has to be compared with these orbital commercial flights that are coming. But we'll get to that in a minute. So that's what happened with his flight. It is important because you now can buy a ticket. The government no longer controls the thing. You now can, if you want to go into space, all you got to do is put the money down and you can get into space for just 4 minutes, 5 minutes. And that's a good deal.
Detail, Bob. Is he in space? I know it's fussy, but
yes.
Yeah, we're selling.
Yes, I mean, this is there's an argument here. The definition of where does space begin, the U.S.'s definition since the beginning of the space age has been 50 miles. The international definition for space is 100 kilometers or 67 miles. So you could argue where is the line, and it's a vague line, but according to the U.S. Government military, 50 miles is space. You're pretty much above the atmosphere. You can see the curve of the Earth. He actually got up to about 60 miles, so he wasn't much below the international definition. So, yes, I would say he was in space. I don't think there's any question of that. Once again, though, there is the issue of where does this company stand? It's interesting that the day after the flight, Virgin Galactic announced they were now doing a stock sale for an additional $500 million of new shares, and the result was their stock price crashed. In fact, it fell so quickly and the volatility was so high that they halted trading briefly on Monday. Now, that drop of price reflects several things that have nothing to do with the overall very bright picture for commercial space and manned space. First, of course, that release of a new stock meant that supply was greater than demand, and though the price dropped. Second, while his flight was grand, it highlighted its limitations. There is a market for suborbital tourism, but with the coming arrival of regular cheap orbital flights, it's going to cut into the market for suborbital. It's not that good a deal. 5 minutes of weightlessness cannot compare with a week in orbit. And then, of course, there's Virgin Galactic itself. The Spaceship Two, Unity, is pretty much a dead end engineering-wise. It can't be upgraded to do much else. And so where does the company go once the suborbital? It's a limited market. They can make money. I don't know if they can ever get their investment capital back, though, with what they've got, John.
We have another competitor. That would be Blue Origin, for commercializing passengers into space. Now, Blue Origin has won a license to do what, Bob?
Well, this is the same deal. Blue Origin is going to fly a suborbital commercial flight with passengers, including a paying passenger this time. And that's only about, a week away on July 20th, the 52nd anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing on the moon. That flight is going to be almost identical to Virgin Galactic's Branson flight, but it's going to reach the international margin for space, go a little higher. It will include Jeff Bezos, the founder of Blue Origin and Amazon, his brother. It'll include Wally Funk, one of the last surviving members of the female astronauts who competed to try to get to go to space in the 1960s. And it also includes the as yet unnamed paying passenger who paid $29 some odd million for the right to fly on this flight. And it'll be a suborbital flight. It won't last more than 10 minutes. It'll be less than 5 minutes in weightlessness. Overall flight from launch to landing will be about 15 minutes. And they're going to fly that. But this gets back to, once again, that's the suborbital market, John. And, Blue Origin has potential beyond suborbital because they are developing an orbital rocket, which we hope to see by next year. And so they can then start competing on the orbital market for passengers in space.
Freedom in space, Bob. You have celebrated this for many years. Is it here now with these suborbital ventures?
Yes. These two suborbital flights, one that has just happened and one that's coming up, there's a lot of press. The mainstream press is going agog with it, hundreds of stories, and there's plenty of excitement and joy about it. But you know what? If you focus on these flights, you're getting a distorted idea of what the future is, because freedom, that by allowing, by finally not preventing private companies and individuals from building their own rockets and their own capsules, to sell to others, owning it themselves, by finally allowing that to happen, the United States now suddenly has a renaissance. So, these two flights will happen suborbital in July, but beginning in September, we're going to have a manned orbital mission, commercial orbital mission, every single month, pretty much through the end of the year. And then frequently through the next 2 or 3 years, including one orbit mission that's supposed to go around the moon, others that are going to go to ISS, and the beginning of the building of a space station private. And what this means is that this manifest of future flights is so packed, they've already exceeded the capacity of ISS to handle it, which is why two flights are just simply going to be orbital. They're not going to dock with ISS. And what essentially is happening is private enterprise and the individual dreams of the people is determining what's going to happen, not a government program that determines everything that happens. Instead, NASA's got its government program, and it's buying the services of these private companies, but the private companies are also able to sell it to others, and so individuals who want to buy the product are doing so. And so we've got lots of flights coming, two possible movies being shot in space, and and lots of tourists, one going up just simply for he wants to go, but he's also doing it for charitable purposes, trying to raise money for St. Jude's Hospital, Children's Hospital. So what this all comes down to is this. This has to do with freedom. You have many different missions. Government's programs seem now quaint, small, and somewhat inefficient in comparison to this. You know, when freedom is the goal, you get big dreams, and you get lots of dreams. And that's where we are today, John. And that's really for the future of space in the coming years. If we don't clamp down on freedom in space and the ability to anyone to fly, then we're going to have everything we want in the space.
Super Heavy getting ready to fly. What is Super Heavy?
Well, this is an example of that, John. Super Heavy is SpaceX's attempt to build, with private capital, they've raised the money, no government money, to build a heavy lift rocket comparable, maybe a little better than the Saturn V rocket, but completely reusable. The Starship was the upper stage. They've been testing that, and they're getting ready for an orbital mission. Super Heavy is the first stage. It's the equivalent of the first stage on Falcon 9, but a lot more powerful. And they're getting ready to do tests of that first prototype. They've done already a tank test, their first tank test successfully. They're going to do more tank tests, and then they're going to do static fire tests of the engines. And everything goes right. Sometime, they say before the end of the summer, and it could very well be, they will then do a near-orbital flight of Starship on top of Super Heavy. And it's definitely coming close, John. It's really coming close. Right now, I think the odds are 50-50 that Super Heavy and Starship will reach orbit before NASA's government-built SLS. And they'll do it in just a few years compared to SLS's 15 and for a tenth the amount of money.
Northrop Grumman wins a contract. What is Gateway?
All right, Lunar Gateway is the orbiting space station around the moon that NASA wants to build. This is their project. And what NASA's been doing now is they're no longer building things themselves. They are now just simply hiring other companies to build things for them. And so what Northrop Grumman has done is it won the contract to build the habitable module for Gateway. There are other modules being built by other companies, but Northrop Grumman's going to build that module, and they've now finalized the full contract. It's about $1 billion to build this module to orbit. It's the module that Starship will dock to, that Orion will dock to, and it's the module they want to be able to have it inhabit periodically, intermittently, in orbit around the moon and be a base of operations. I still question the practicality of this, but, you know, they're moving ahead and at least doing it right. They're having private companies do it. What I think is ironic here is that this module, they call it HALO, it's an acronym, it's based on the Cygnus cargo freighter that goes to ISS. It's an upgrade of that, which means it's about the size of that, which means you could probably store about four of them inside the cargo bay of Starship. And so about the time HALO gets launched, which will be about 2024, if things go as SpaceX plans, they will be launching Starships into orbit at that time. And the cost for those launches, they estimate, is going to be about $2 million a launch compared to the $1 billion that they're going to spend to get HALO launched. So once again, we have an interesting contract here between a government project and a private contract.
Quickly, Bob, has Space Force escaped the Air Force, or is still held captive?
It's a combination of both. Space Force was really designed to give focus to the military space effort instead of having been captured by the interests of the Air Force, so they made a separate division. My fear always was that the bureaucracies will just simply use it to grow, and that appears to be the case. The House is slamming the military for not reforming contracting for space, which was the whole point of creating the Space Force. They're not doing it yet. They're still just building a bureaucracy. That's all they're doing.
Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. It's fundraising month for Bob Zimmerman, July. Your generosity, much appreciated. We're going exploring on Mars next. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.